This week's parasha is Parashas Tzav. And Parashas Tzav starts off with a mitzvah, which we call the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen involves what seems to be a very menial task, and that is that the Kayin goes and sweeps some of the ashes off of the top of the Mizbeach every morning after the parts of the carbon that needed to be burned were burned throughout the night, and in the morning come to the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, and you see that there's ashes that are remaining. So you take you scoop up those ashes, you walk them down from the Mizbeach to the floor of the Mishkan, and then you put it on the side of the Mizbeach. The ashes that you scoop up, you put on the side. A miracle happened to have happened that the ashes that were put on the side of the Mizbeach actually got swallowed into the ground next to the Mizbeach. And that's the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshen. You have to, the Kayin is supposed to have a change of clothing. But that is the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshen. What is the point of this mitzvah? Why not just have custodians go and sweep up the Beis HaMikdash in the morning and do their job for them? Why does this have to be done by the Kayin himself? There's two very famous Rabbeinu Bechayes in history. One of them was Rabbeinu Bechaye ben Asher ibn Chalava. He was the one that wrote the famous commentary al HaTorah, the Rabbeinu Bechaye that we've quoted so often. He was the author of that. It's said that the Chasam Sofer used to say that he's been learning Rabbeinu Bechaye on the Parsha for 30 years. Every single week he's learned the entire Rabbeinu Bechaye on the Parsha, and every week that he sees it, he finds something brand new in it that he hasn't seen in previous years. That's just to give us a little bit of an understanding of how great Rabbeinu Bechaye is. Trust me, the Chasam Sofer, if he saw it once, he could have been, he had complete mastery over it, and yet he was able every year to find something, a new layer, and that is a little bit of a glimpse into the greatness of that Rabbeinu Bechaye. There's another Rabbeinu Bechaye in history that's also extremely famous. I don't know if you would know that his name is Rabbeinu Bechaye, but his name is Rabbeinu Bechaye ben Rabbi Yosef ibn Pakuda, and he was the author of the great Sefer Chavis Havavis. The Chavis Havavis is perhaps the earliest classic Musar Sefer, if not the earliest, one of the earliest, and it just gets more and more popular as time goes on. The perhaps most famous part of the Chavis Havavis is Shaar Bitachin, which is extremely, extremely important in our times to master, to learn, to try to absorb, because it really gives us the secret to how to be happy in life. It teaches us how wealth is very transient. We don't have to worry so much about money because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really the one that gives all wealth to everybody. And don't be upset about wealth. Because if you have Hashem, you have basically all the money in the world. You have the equivalent, he calls it a money tree. We can call it an ATM machine or a printing press in our basement. We could print as much money as we want if we have Hashem on our side. If we have Bitachon and Hashem, that's all we need. There's a famous story about the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav, when he got married, to an extremely wealthy woman, young woman, and the dowry that her father gave to the Brisker Rav, which is, you know, very chashuv shidduch, he went to Brisk, it must be a very chashuv shidduch. So the dowry that the Brisker Rav got from his shver was a street in Warsaw, an entire block of real estate, of homes, of buildings, whatever it was, in Warsaw. Now, Warsaw was not a backwater town like many other parts of Eastern Europe, when we think about, you know, people go on trips to Eastern Europe, they, you know, they go to these decrepit little, you know, one horse towns with like these dilapidated huts. That wasn't Warsaw. Warsaw was a very metropolitan city. Warsaw was like the Spitz of Europe. Everybody went to Warsaw. That's where there was very wealthy people lived in Warsaw. There was industry in Warsaw. There was theater, the arts. It was like basically one square block of Manhattan real estate, or let's say downtown Toronto or something like that. Very hush of a real estate. And that was the nadan, the dowry that the Briskerov got. And what happened was that he became very busy with this real estate. He got married. He wanted to just sit and learn. Briskerov was the gadladar. He wanted to just sit and learn, and he found himself somewhat distracted by being a landlord, as you can understand. Everyone wants to be a big real estate holder, whatever, a landlord. And when you actually have to do it, it's very difficult. You always have to worry about people's problems, if there is a flood, if there is a leak, if the roof is, something is happening. It's not so easy to be in real estate. And he found himself being very distracted, and he decided that he wants to sell it. He wants to cash out of the business. And he assigned a broker, a Jewish broker, to be in charge of finding a buyer. He basically, I don't know, somehow he gave a power of attorney over to this broker. And the war started breaking out around that time. And before you knew it, the broker sort of scammed the Briskerov and took all of his real estate away and sold it. And then I think after he died during the war. And the Briskerov had no way of retrieving this real estate. And it was a big blow to him because he thought that he was a gevir. He thought that he'd be able to have enough money to live on for the rest of his life from these buildings, and he should have, but somebody took the money from him. And what he did was he started learning Chayvus Havah v'Shaar Bitachon. And he learned it bi'iyun, as you can imagine, the Briskerov learning anything. He didn't learn it superficially, he learned it bi'iyun. And he said, after he finished learning the Chayvus Havah v'Shaar Bitachon, that I used to think that being wealthy was owning a block of real estate in Warsaw. Now I realize that a wealthy man is somebody that knows Shaar Bitachon. The Chayvus Havah is a Shaar Bitachon. Because if you're able to really know all about Bitachon, which is what the Chayvus Havah goes into, Be'ion, about how much greater it is to have Bitachon than have all the money in the world, then you would understand, says the Briskerov, that that's true happiness. True happiness is able to have the serenity, the knowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is providing for me. I don't have to worry, and I should stop, you know, this constant, fear and nervousness and stress that constantly plays like a loop in my brain, always, you know, telling me that I need to work harder, I need to do more, and what's going to be. All of those daigas are things that would be swept away if a person would only have the knowledge of Shaar Bitachon and the Chayvus Havah. These two Rabbeinu Bechayas, the one that wrote the commentary on Chumash and the one that wrote the Chayvus Havah, says the same exact thing on the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshen, to explain why it's necessary, what's behind this mitzvah, this seemingly menial task of sweeping up the ash from the top of the Mizbeach and putting it on the side of the Mizbeach, and why not just get a crew of people to do that for you. Both of them are mechavin to the same vart, and that is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants that his servants serve him with shiflus, with anivus. He doesn't want anyone walking around pompously in his makim hamikdash, in his mishkan. He doesn't want the kaihanim feeling like they own the world. And really, they do own the world in a sense, because there are mitzvahs of the kiddashtei. The kiddashtei means that the Torah tells us that we have to sanctify the kayin, we have to put him front and center in our lives. Levarich Rishain, he gets the first Aliyah in the Torah, he gets Kayin, and he's also supposed to get Lito Mana Yafa Rishain. If let's say you have you order a pizza pie, and there's always that one large slice that everybody has their eye on, nobody wants to, you know, say that out loud, but everybody, when no one's looking, they chop the largest slice, that would go to the Kayin. Liton mani yafrit v'kidashe is the mitzvahs. If you have a kayin in your chabur, give that big slice to the kayin. That's his. To give him the mani yafarishain. And everything that he benches, he does, he gets first dibs on everything, the kayin. So really, he could think, wow, you know, I'm pretty big. I have yichus, and I'm the top gun here. I'm in charge of the Beis HaMikdash. I'm guarding the Beis HaMikdash. I'm doing the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. I'm the one that's wearing the Shmeina Begadim if I'm the Kayin Gadol, or the Dalek Begadim if I'm a Kayin Hedrit. They were walking around like they, the Torah says, no, we want to bring you down a notch. You're serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you have to remember that you are serving at Hashem's leisure. And don't believe for a second that you are so important that, you know, the little people are the ones that are supposed to be doing the menial tasks. Quite the opposite. We bring you into doing the menial tasks, and if you could do the menial tasks right, that shows that you're a real Eved Hashem. That shows that I'll be willing to go and even do something that seems to be beneath me, and that would be a that would be part of your Aveda. This is how both Rabbeinu Bechayez understand the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshen. It's in order to be mashpil the Kayin. Bring him down a little bit. Let him understand that he's at the end of the day, he's an Ebet Hashem, and he has to do anything Hashem commands him, and that's on him. That's his responsibility. The Trumas Hadeshen symbolizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do even the menial avodas. That's also on you. Don't think that you're so great, that you're so high. You are, but everything is included in the task of being an Eved Hashem. That's how the Rabbeinu Bechayez understand the mitzvah. But there is another side to this coin, and that is the shita, the pirush of Rabbeinu Yaina. And Rabbeinu Yaina has a different take on the mitzvah. And that is that we command the kayin to wear the begadim that shows his chashivas. And in those begadim, he is mispire. He's prideful, and he should be. He's the kayin gadol, whatever it is. And then he's supposed to go and scoop up the ashes. And by that, he's showing that this is the greatest of tasks for me. Not like the other Rishonim say, that this is, even though it's a very low level, it's a melacha grua, it's a low level task, but we're going to make you do it to bring you down a notch. No. The greatest avaida, the most exalted avaida that a kayin could possibly do, is to be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the lowest of forms. There's no greater avaida, there's no greater zchus than a kayin being able to do, to roll up his sleeves, as it were, and to do something that gets his hands dirty, because I'm doing this for the Rabbeinu Shlom. That is not a bizayin that, okay, I thank you, I was brought down a notch, you just reminded me of who I really have to remember that I am. I'm just a mere flesh and blood. No, you're great, and your greatness is exactly lying in the fact that you are doing lowly avodas for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Lashon Rabbeinu Yaina is that v'afilu b'derech ha'bezuya b'nei abriyos, even if you're doing an avoda that's considered to be demeaning in the eyes of the briyos, zuhi reimemusai, says Rabbeinu Yaina, this is in fact the greatest reimemus, this is the greatest exaltation that a kayin could have, the greatest schus, the greatest badge of honor for a kayin, is to do what people consider to be menial. That's what I want to do. I want to do that for the Rebbeinu Shlom. I want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the most menial of ways to show him that I'm so proud of anything that I'm doing for him is a schus. There's nothing that's beneath me. That exactly is what I want to show. We've spoken a lot about the yeshiva in Kelem, the great Musar Citadel of Kelem. Kelem had a yeshiva called the Talmud Torah of Kelem. And this was a place that people went to really iron out all of the kinks in their, all the creases in their neshama and their midas, Kelm was a place to go. It was very regimented. It was extremely Musser-oriented. And it was very, very difficult to be there because you really had to control everything that you were doing. You were not allowed to leave anything to your natural inclinations. Everything had to be forethought, and everything had to be done with a cheshbon, and if not, you were fined. We've discussed it in the past. I don't want to go over it again. But in Kelm, on, I guess it was Simchas Torah, I'm not sure exactly, but let's call it Simchas Torah, where we know that there are always like auctions going on throughout the world in Simchas Torah and shuls and yeshivas. In shuls, it's generally for money, to raise money for the shul, which is necessary. So they'll auction off atarei, so they'll auction off chasen Torah, chasen bereshis, haitzah v'achnasa. In some shuls, they'll auction off the yayin l'kiddush l'avdallah, all the wine for the whole coming year that's going to be used for Kiddush Friday night and Havdalah Matzai Shabbos. They'll sell ner l'ma'ar in certain shuls, which is the electricity bill of the whole year that will light up the shul. These are big schus, and these are big schus for the year. You're starting the beginning of the year. You want to be able to chaperein many schusim. This is what many shuls do. Either they do it Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they maybe do some Simchas Torah, wherever it is, but there is an auction. In yeshivas, a lot of times they do some for money. Some kibudim are auctioned off like we do in yeshiva when we used to have a Simchas Torah. Maybe we'll have it again next year if there's a groundswell of interest. But we sell it for Blat Gemara, for Mishnayas, for Chazaras, whatever it is that we have different things to auction off. We auction off for Aliyas, etc., for Torah. And again, you auction off Chasen Torah, Chasen Bereshis, Maftir, whatever it is. These are things that were auctioned off. In Kelm, they also had an auction. But when it came to Maftir Yaina, whatever they're auctioning off, that normally would get thousands of blah, thousands of daf. That went for very shvach. That was like not so big. And then when they did Ataresa, also, you know, 100 blot, 200 blot. What do you think got the most bids, the highest bids that went for like, you know, 3,000 blot, 10,000 blot? They were bidding like crazy. The bidding got furious when it came to one kibud. You're not going to believe this. It was the kibud of cleaning the bathrooms. They didn't have janitors going around, custodians going around every morning and every night like we do cleaning the toilets. They had bachrim to do that. That was part of the taranut. That was part of the responsibility of the bachrim and the yeshiva, that they had to go and clean it out. And it wasn't as easy as to clean out the modern-day toilets. It was probably outhouses, which were, I'm not going to describe exactly what that was, but it was not pleasant. But the bidding went astronomically. Everybody was like, everybody desperately wanted the schus of cleaning out the Beis HaKiseh in the yeshiva. Why? Why would anyone want? Nobody wants that. The reason why nobody wants is because we don't look at things the right way. Our hashkafas are that there's things that the hired help do. And then there's things that chashuva people do. Chashuva people, they're the ones that they get maftir yayna, they get ataresa, they get chasen Torah, chasen bread. That's what I want. That's the kibud. That's for me. That passes for me. If I get chamishi, if I get if I get shvi, then the gabe, you know, I'm bregis with the gabe for a year. You know the famous joke about a guy that was like a very chashuva guy that came to a town. And, he was very, very wealthy and very affluent. And the gabbai calls him up for chamishi. You know, that's not, doesn't pass. You either get shlishi, you get shishi, you know, no, maftir maybe, but chamishi is like, no. So this guy got very upset. You know, he's used to getting the shpitzki budim, give him chamishi. So he's, after the aliyah was over, he goes to the gabbai, he says, I just want you to know, the town that I come from, they give chamishi to a hund, to the dog, they give chamishi. So the gabbai is very sharp. He says, yeah, that's our minig here too. But that's the kibud that I want, the chashuva kibudim. I want the shpitz kibud. But in Kelm, they understood that, you know what the shpitz kibud is? The shpitz kibud is the most menial of kibudim, the showing that I am completely an eved to the Rebbeinu. By me getting mafter yain, does that mean say anything about God? It just says about me that I'm chashuv, and it gets to me. If I'm cleaning out the toilets, there's no, you know, it's only the Rebbeinu Shem. I'm only doing this for the L'shem Shemaim. There's no personal, no one's looking at me like, wow, you're amazing. That's the Avaida that they wanted in Kalam. I want something that I could show HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it's bilti L'Hashem Levadeh. I'm doing this for you. I'm doing this as, I'm your Eved, and this is what's necessary to be done. I'm going to do it for you. And that's what they wanted. If we would understand how chashuv it is, we would like, you know, instead of like, you know, ignoring the custodians or telling them, you know, that, you know, why are you stopping the, you know, you can't, you know, they always put the, you can't go in always at the most important time of, you know, they always stop you, you know, like right after davening, right after Seder or whatever, on your, you know, you, every time you need to be there, again, so we get very upset, do it another day. We would like take the janitor's, you know, begadim off of him, we would take it, and we would ourselves like insist on doing it. Because that's what it is. To be a real Eved Hashem means I'm not trying to avoid doing the menial task. I want to do the menial task because the menial tasks are the way that I show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I'm the greatest Eved. Rabbeinu Yaina says that that's the side of Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen is the opportunity. People, the Kayanim were fighting for the Trumas Hadeshen. Everybody wanted to take the apron, take the broom, and start sweeping up the top of the Mizbeach because that was menial. That's what is the greatest form of Avedis Hashem. The more menial, the more meaningful. That might be the title of the Shmuz. Menial is meaningful, maybe. All right, so that is. I'll tell you a story about my father, Olav Shalom. My father was a very distinguished Yid. I don't think anyone here knew my father. My father was Nifter about 12 years ago. Every Friday, Kimat, every Friday he came to the Shmuz. Used to be downstairs. In the Beis Medrash, she came every Friday to the Shmuz Kemat, and he would drive in from Long Beach, and then we would go out for lunch afterwards. The Shmuz used to be later. It used to be 10:30 in the morning. It was finished by 11:30, and we went out for lunch. And that was our Fridays. And my father is a very distinguished man. The old Talmidim remember him. He was very European. He was very stately. He was very spitz. He always, you know, it skipped a generation. I think it went to my kids. But, you know, he wore, like, beautiful suits and beautiful ties. And he was, like, always very elegant. And my father was in charge in Long Beach of building the mikveh. They needed a mikveh. There was a, you know, they used to have a mikveh in like one of the old age homes, one of the nursing homes, a very shvach mikveh on every level. It was like really not nice. And so they decided they had to build a mikveh, and it wasn't able to be done. Like there was a committee of people that were trying to do it, and it never worked out. My father's like, you know what, I'm going to do it. And he basically single-handedly raised a tremendous amount of money, bought the property, hired the greatest, the greatest bekiyim in Hilchas Mikvais to come and consult and build everything Kedasa Kedin, and he built the thing, and not only did he build it, but he also afterwards took ownership of it in the sense that every morning after davening he would go from the Young Israel, which was a block away from the mikveh, and he would drive to the mikveh, and he would open up the door, and he would make sure that that everything was running well, and the heat was on, and he would take the towels, bechveida ba'atzmai, all the dirty towels from the day before, the night before, and he would put them in the washing machine, and then he would go to Country Boy, the local bakery, and get danishes and coffees for the cleaning ladies that were going to come later to mop and to whatever, and when I first saw this, I literally could not understand what I was seeing. Because my father at home, I don't think he ever came within 10 feet of the washer dryer at home. Just didn't. It wasn't, not because it was beneath him, it just wasn't something that was shayach to him. It just wasn't his role, it wasn't his responsibility, and he never did it. And all of a sudden now, he was in a mikvah, you know, and he was taking mamish these towels and putting them in the washer and then the dryer, and it was something to me that was very big, very mechudishtik. And I believe that it's because of this. This is something that it's a schus. When you have this schus of being Isaac b'tzarchei tzibur, there's nothing that's menial about it. There's nothing that's beneath you. It was a schus, and he saw it as a schus. He saw it like the Bachrim and Kelm. It's an opportunity to go and do something for the Rabbim, for the Tzibur. I want to do it. That's something that I want to do. It's not beneath me. Not beneath me. This is what needs to be done. This is what I should do. It's not just the Kayin that teaches us this lesson of the Trumas Hadeshen, that the lower the Avaida, the more chashav it is. But this is really the role of a melech, a king. When you think of a king, what do you think? What comes to your mind when you think of a king? You think of, I think of like this guy that sits, you know, like on a big throne, and he wears like a Fred Flintstone fur, you know, with the speckled white and black fur around him, and there are people maybe fanning him, and he's like, you know, eating very gluttonously, and he has wine. That's how you know, you think of a king. That's not a Jewish king. That's not the way a Jewish king, obviously a Jewish king has kavod, melech shemachal kavodai in kavod melech. Yeah, there's kavod that comes to a king, no doubt. But a king, what he really is a public servant. He's a public servant. Now, when we speak about a public servant, that's like what politicians like to call themselves, to be more pompous. You know, I'm a public servant. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. It just means it's a fancy way of being humble. But you're not humble. You're really gaivadik. But a real melech b'Yisrael is literally a public servant. He understands that his entire job is to serve the people in any capacity that he has to. The greatest king was David HaMelech. David HaMelech, the Gemara says that in Brachas, right at the beginning of Maseches Brachas, Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, Amar David Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. David HaMelech says in front of Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Loi Chasid Ani, am I not a chasid? Am I not somebody that serves you piously, Lefnei Mishuras Hadin? All of the kings, all of my colleagues, all of my counterparts in the east and in the west, Yeshvim agudais bechvaidam. They sit in groups. They have these conferences together. They have meetings. They go and they speak about how great they are, and each of them are bragging about how many wives they have and how many horses they have and how big their palace is. What they do in the summer, do in the winter. That's what they're busy with. What am I busy with, says David HaMelech to Hashem? V'ani yadai meluchlochais bedam uveshafir uveshulya kidei latar ish labayla. David HaMelech was a paisik. David HaMelech was a person that people would go to, and women would go, and they would show their maris, if they were, is this dam that's puzzle? Does this make me a nida? Am I tahar? If she had a miscarriage, they would bring David HaMelech the placenta and for him to paskin exactly what it is, zacher, nekeva, tameh, tar, whatever it was. All of these were David HaMelech's responsibilities. Imagine going to a melech and pulling out some blood, pulling out a shalya, something that's menial. This is something that, you know, who looks at this stuff? This is something that nobody wants to touch. As soon as you show this to somebody, they get a magil. But David HaMelech says, I'm a chassid. My hands are meluch lochais bedam uveshalya. This is what I'm busy with. I'm busy because he was a public servant. A melech, I think, this is my own theory, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right. The word melech is from the same sherish as meluchloch. Yadai meluchloches. I get my hands dirty. A melech is not afraid to get their hands dirty because he understands that the greatest malchus is serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what I'm doing. If you feel like there's something beneath you, you're missing the point. You go to a Rav and he, you know, you show him a mari, you show him a cloth or an undergarment that has blood on it, and it's like, you know, I feel bad. Don't feel bad. This is the greatest kavod. This is a kavod that he gets to be able to paskin a shayla for the Rabbeinu Shalom, getting his hands dirty. This is David HaMelech. Yadai meluchlach, it's my hands are, I'm a melech. You know I know I'm a melech? Because my hands are dirty. I get my hands meluchlachis. I'm not afraid to do the Trumas Hadeshen. That's my kavod. That's the greatest kavod. Where else do we find this? We find it by David HaMelech again. David HaMelech, when the Aron came back, the Aron was taken hostage, and finally they were able to get it back. And When they got the Aron back, David HaMelech goes out and he starts dancing in front of the Aron in a very, very dramatic, very jovial, almost lighthearted manner. And David HaMelech was married to Michal Bashal. She was a princess. She was the daughter of Shaul HaMelech. And she got very upset at him. She's like giving him dirty looks the whole time, like, what are you doing? You're the melech b'Yisrael. You dance around like yeshiva bach. You're dancing like, you know, like, what are you doing? You're the melech. You don't do that. And you know what David HaMelech says? A famous line. He says, "Unikaloisi ayd mizais." I should even be more lowly. But you see, shuffle bainav. I should even be lowlier in the eyes of the people, in the eyes of the women that are staring at me like, what are you doing? Halavai, I should do even things that are more menial, more pedestrian, because I'm in front of the Rabbeinu Shalom. I'm trying to be mashpil myself in front of the Rabbeinu Shalom. That's the kayach of a melech. That's the kayach of any yid. The Rambam brings this down lahalacha. The Rambam says, at the end of Hilchos Lulav, very famous Rambam, that v'chal ha-mashpil atzmai, this is talking about the Simchas Beis HaShoev and the Beis HaMikdash, how the Gedolim used to dance and they would juggle with fires. And can you imagine the scene for a second of having, I don't know, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Aaron Kotler, and Rav Yan Kamenetsky in the middle of a circle, and they're juggling with they're juggling fire. Can you imagine such a thing? But that's exactly what happened in the Beis HaMikdash on Simchas Beis HaShoeva. By Simchas Beis HaShoeva, they were Gedolim, Tanoim, that were juggling fire, and they were juggling glasses, and they were doing all types of dancing and shtick. How could such a thing be? It's not imaginable. The Rambam writes that whoever lowers himself more in these places, who are Gadol HaMechubad HaYivim Eavah, he's the more Bakavadika one. He's the one who is more serving with love. V'chein David Melech Yisrael Amar, unikal loisad mizayis v'zishol bein of that. That's the pasuk I just quoted. V'ein ha-gedula v'akavit, says the Rambam, el l'smayach of Hashem. There's no greater gedula. There's no greater kavit but to be joyous in front of Hashem. Shenemer v'amelech David mefazis u'mekarkel of Hashem. By the way, there's a Rav Shach says a beautiful vart on this Rambam. He says that there's a medrash that says that Shlomo HaMelech wrote Sefer Kehelas. Why did Shlomo HaMelech write Sefer Kehelas? Why did Shlomo HaMelech? Why can't anyone could write Hakol Havel? Right? I could also say nothing. You know, this the whole life is nothing. Kairat Hagar, all my celebrations. I'll say this is nothing. I could be a philosopher also. Right, why can't I say, I can't write Sefer Kehelas? Shlomo HaMelech had to write Sefer Kehelas and say the world is nothing? A lot of people know the world is nothing. Says the Medrash, only Shlomo HaMelech could say that the world is nothing because he had everything. If you have everything now, you could say the world is nothing. If you're saying, you know, cars are shtusim, really? Because maybe you're driving your 1994 Honda Civic, you know? But you know, did you ever drive a Ferrari in your life? You ever took a Ferrari for a spin? You ever took a Lamborghini for? You ever drove in a Rolls Royce? No? Okay, so then keep your mouth shut. Don't tell me that cars are nothing, because you never saw, if you drive a Lamborghini, and now you tell me that cars are nothing, now you have credibility. If you're telling me that, everything is shtusim, you know, houses are nothing, really, where do you live? Try living in a palace with swimming pools and with a gym and with a this and with a that, and then tell me that houses are nothing. Shlomo HaMelech did that. Shlomo HaMelech had all the houses, all the palaces, all the mansions, all the food, all the vineyards, all the wine. He had 1,000 wives. He had 1,000 mothers-in-law, right? But he had everything, right? But Shlomo HaMelech writes Kehelis, and Shlomo HaMelech says, Havel, Havolam, Hakel, Havel. It's everything is nothing. He has the credibility to say everything is nothing. He has everything, and he could say that's believable. Now I believe him. When somebody says Hakol Havel, I trust you. Says Rav Shach, there was no greater person in Jewish history, at least maybe, let's say, from the times of the Rishonim till today, that got more covered in his lifetime than the Rambam. The Rambam was celebrated by the entire world, even today. Even today, there's in the world of philosophy, the Rambam's Mar Nevuchim. In the world of medicine, the Rambam is the Rambam. In Maimonides Hospital, everything is the Rambam. And the world of the yeshiva, there's no greater Rishon than the Rambam. The whole world, you know, kachzach on Rambams all day. Brisk, the Rambam is the omen of Torah Shabbat Peh. Without the Rambam, we would have how many Sfarim are written on the Mishnah Torah? Hundreds. The Rambam had it all. The Rambam was the greatest. If there is anyone in world history in the last 1,000 years that got real covet, I'm not talking about fake covet, I'm talking about real covet, was the Rambam. The Rambam was, from all circles, he was celebrated in the guy. He was the personal physician of the Sultan of Egypt. He was that's like being the Attorney General of the United States, let's say, but 1,000 times more chashim in those days. He had everything. He was an expert doctor, an expert in Havdil and Torah, philosophy. What didn't the Rambam have? The Rambam had everything. And the Rambam writes, says Rav Shach, with all of his kavod, ve'ein ha-gedula va-kavod el l'smayach lefnei Hashem. You want to know what real kavod is? It's just being happy in front of Hashem. That's it. That's it. Says Rav Shach, if the Rambam writes this, then that's money in the bank. We could trust that. If you want to know what real honor is being happy in the presence of Hashem. Doing what needs to be done in Hashem's presence, just like Shlomo HaMelech was the person that had the credibility to say Hakol Havel, because he had it all, the Rambam had all the kavod. So when he says, Ve'ein ha-gedula va-kavod el l'smayach lefnei Hashem, trust him. He knows what he's talking about. In the kavod department, the Rambam knew what he was talking about. If the Rambam had all the kavod, and still he says it's nothing relative to being happy in the presence of Hashem, that's something that we could trust. What we see from this Rambam is that a melech is somebody that the more bazoidik that I could be in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the greater it is. The greater it is. Give me more menial tasks. I want to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I seriously, you know, serve him without any, it's not about me. It's all about him. It's bilti l'Hashem levadei. The Kayin Gadol on Yom Kippurim teaches us this, and a melech teaches us, Yadai Meluchloches Bidam. You get your hands dirty, that shows Lav Chasin on you. That's what a melech really is. I want to just bring this a little bit closer to home. For some of you, it's Nageya, because some of you are married, and some of you are chasanim, and some of you are going to be a mitzvah Hashem chasanim soon, or whenever the right time is. And this is something that you have to keep in mind, and I have to keep it in mind. Chasan daime lemelech. A chasan is like a melech. And there's so much Sheva Brachas Torah. How is he like a king? What's the shaykh between a king and a chasan? But I think the pshat is that just like a melech is from a lashon of meluchloch, that you get your hands dirty. You're not afraid to get your hands dirty because you understand this is your responsibility. This is not only your responsibility. That sounds like it's like a chore. It's not a chore. It's a schus. It's a beautiful chore. It's a beautiful responsibility. It's a wonderful oil to have. Because I get to show this is what I do for the kingship, for the melucha. I do everything and anything that needs to be done. That's what I will do. I'm prepared to do anything. So when it comes to being a melech in your house, when it comes to being a chassan, the more that a person is able and willing to do the most menial tasks in the house, the more of a melech you are. A lot of us come into marriage believing, and maybe because we saw our parents do it this way, our grandparents, I don't know, but we believe that, okay, this is going to be great. I'm going to get married. I'm going to have a wife that cooks for me, cleans for me, does laundry, mops, sweeps, does everything. This is great. I got free help for the rest of my life. I got free housekeeping. And this is a very, very big mistake to make, because by doing so, first of all, it's not the truth. It's not what marriage was supposed to be. And also, you're losing out on the greatest chus that you could have. The greatest chus that you have as a melech, if you really want to be a melech, it's that you have to have an understanding that I'm willing and able to do the most menial tasks. It's not on my wife, dude. I want to do it. You could fight with your wife about one thing, about who gets to take out the garbage, who gets to clean the dishes, who gets to clear the table and to set the table. If you're both sitting back and saying, well, I'm not going to do it, you do it, that's the biggest recipe for disaster. The greatest marriages are the marriages that a husband is not afraid to roll up his sleeves and not doing it and go, fine, I'll do it. I want to do it. This is what I want to do. I've been to homes that the husband literally, he's like doing everything. He serves everything. He clears everything. He's like, as we're sitting around schmoozing after the meal is over, everybody has to like pick up their feet because he already has a broom in hand. He's already sweeping underneath the table and getting the whole place spick and span. And it's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. That's pshat chasim daim lamelech. You have a mitzvah of trumas hadeshen. Every single day you have a mitzvah of trumas hadeshen. You could sweep up the kitchen. You could sweep the living room, dining room. You could vacuum. That's a great thing. It's a great thing. A lot of times, sometimes people grow up and if they're affluent people, they have live-in cleaning ladies. Or they have cleaning ladies that come very often. And it makes it very easy for the wife, or makes life easier, especially if she's working. Very understandable. I'm not here to criticize it. We have one ourselves, a few days a week. But it's sort of an avla on the children. It's chaval for the children, because the children very often are deprived of the lessons of knowing how to really clean and make your bed and do washes, do laundries, be able to roll up your sleeves and do some work around the house. It's not the end of the world. It's not going to kill anybody, a little work. But instead, we feel we have to pamper our children. Everything has to be done for them. And then they get married and they're totally not prepared to run a household because they don't know how to do a laundry. They don't know how to make a bed. They don't know how to cook, how to clean, how to make Shabbos because they don't have to do it. I once spoke recently in a girls' high school and basically I said that whatever the topic was, but at the end I said, maybe it's none of my business, but if you would every morning before you go to school make your bed, your life would be completely different. Your life would be completely different. What does it take to make a bed? You go like this, and then it's done. It's not a big deal. You just go like this, and then it sort of falls nicely on the bed. Maybe you have to do a little. No one's asking you for hospital corners. But to make your bed means that you have a little bit of responsibility. I'm curious, and I don't want to know, but I'm curious if I would walk through the dorms now, how many of the beds are made? How many people made their beds? Not just Lakovid Shabbos, Lakovid Friday. Does anyone make their beds anymore? I don't know. That's an open question. But I'm telling you that it's important to make your bed every morning because, first of all, it's the right thing to do. You have roommates, you have people in your apartment. It's just not nice to leave your bed a schlump. It's just not appropriate, first of all. Second of all, it's nice for yourself. You know that if your mind is neat and you know that your, you know, if your bed is neat, your mind will be neat. You come back later at the end of the day or by lunch or whatever and you see your bed is made, it's a different day. The more neat that you could be, the more clean that you could be, the more that you're able to have the Trumas Hadeshen of your life and make sure to make that your apartment is clean. Don't leave the dishes in the sink to get bugs and all these things. It's not appropriate for a Ben Taira. It's not what we do. The Trumas Hadeshen teaches you that it's a schus to be able to take out the garbage and to do whatever needs to be done to make sure that things are normal, things are clean, things are neat. In the Beis HaMikdash, David HaMelech, everything, the higher that you are, the more neat that you are. A lower person doesn't pass for me, I don't have to make my bed, somebody else should do it, or let it be that way, I don't care. That's a sign that you don't have Kavod HaBriyah. So you don't care about yourself, you don't care about others. A person that cares about themselves and about others, you take that extra, it's literally a second. It's not like, but I'm going to come late for davening, baloney. It takes literally a half a second. I don't think I've not made my bed in 30 years. I don't think I missed a day of making my bed. I don't think so. It's not a big deal. I don't get an award for it. You just go like this, boom, and the bed is made. It's not, you don't have to do a big deal. It's not a lot of milk. It's not like, I don't think I've washed dishes every day of my life. But I offer to dry, and I try to clear the table, come out every Shabbos. And I'm not a poster boy for any schmooze. But this is something that I feel is something that is so fundamental. And then if you do this now, and if you haven't done it until now, that's fine, because this is the first time maybe that you heard it. But it's those girls also the first time they heard it. And whenever they see me, these girls, I'm still making my bed, Rabbi. I'm still making my bed. Not that it's any of my business, but they're proud of it. It makes them feel good about themselves. And you know, I hate when my kids have guests over, like sleepovers, and I go and afterwards I happen to go in there and nobody made their bed. Like, you know, they stay by my house, make your bed. Like, who should make it for you? The answer is that the cleaning people should do it for me. That's not the way we don't think like that. There's no cleaning people. We're the cleaning people. This is part of what I do. I stayed by your house. You were nice enough to host me for the night. Boom, I make my bed. Or I fold up the linen. Whatever you do, that's what you have to do. And if you don't, then this is, you know, Menschlichkeit 101. Midas 101. And we can document it from the Kayin Gadol. Melech, as much as you want, you know, there are stories galore, but this is our kavod. It's menial. That's your kavod. The kavod is the menial things. That's where you want to be. You want to be by the places that they're menial. Sometimes, you know, you go into on Friday night, somebody, they didn't take the pizza boxes away, and there's pizza, like, and then Alfredo has to, like, complain to me Sunday morning that it's bringing this, it's bringing that, and these guys don't know. Why should that be? If you see pizza boxes that are, so you take a bag and you throw it out, put it somewhere, I don't know. You know, the garbage is overflowing Sunday morning and all the... I'm not saying that you should take over the janitor's jobs. I'm really not. But at least it should occur to us that maybe it's not a bad thing to do. It should occur to us that if there is, something that needs to be done, and I see guys doing it. Sometimes we run out of cups, and there's guys that come upstairs and get cups and put it in the coffee room because somebody will need it. When there used to be an urn that needed to be refilled, there was a malach that used to go, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes I would bust the guy, you know, I'd find him doing it. You know, there was a mystery. How does the urn get filled up every morning? How does everyone have hot water? Just a miracle happens, and there's like, you know, manna from heaven that comes in, and no, there's actually people that go and do this. If there is, I don't know if there's Danishes today after the, you know, after the schmooze, but there's actually somebody that goes and picks it up, or Dunkin' Donuts. They go to Dunkin' Donuts, they drive, and they go and they bring, that's not for me. That's for some, what I mean, it's for somebody else. That's your biggest chus. Your biggest chus is that I want to work for the tzibur. I'm a public servant. Bring it on. If it's more menial, that's better. That's what I want. This is a very, very important lesson. I'll end with a story. It's attributed to Rav Gifter. I've seen it also from a different Talz Rosh Hashiva. But the story goes, and you probably heard it a million times, that there was a brand new minted Avrich. He just got married, and he was complaining to his Rebbe, his Rosh Shiva, that his wife expects him to take out the garbage, and he doesn't feel it's Sugabas. I'm a Ben Torah, I'm learning Torah all day, I should take out the garbage, you serious? And the Rosh Shiva, like, nods at what he says, Kilo, he approves of it, you're right. The next morning, there was like a doorbell that rang, and there standing at the doorway that the Avrich opens up the door for is Rav Gifter, B'chvei de Ba'atzmai. He says, what's the Rosh Shiva doing? Everything okay? What's the Rosh Shiva doing? He says, I'm here to take out your garbage. He says, what do you mean taking out? He says, I understand, you're a Ben Torah. It doesn't pass for you to take out the... But I want this chus to take out your garbage. Let me take out your garbage. And you could rest assured that from that day on, that Avrich was very happy to take out the garbage for himself. And we don't need Rav Gifter to come and tell us that, because this is what we're learning today from the Shmuz. These are Ma'ar Mekaymes that teach us the Zchus, the great Zchus of being able to have the Zchus of doing anything and everything that needs to be done, whether it means to throw dirty towels into a washer dryer machine in a mikveh, whether it means scooping off the ashes from the top of the mizbeach, whether it means pasking shilas b'dam and b'shilya, whether it means going and picking up Dunkin' Donuts, whether it means throwing pizza boxes out, whether it means taking it. If you do all these things and you make your bed every morning and you make sure your room is nice and clean and that your socks are not on the floor, you will be the best husband in the world. You'll be a true melech. You'll be a true melech. I'll end with a vart that my father, Alav Shalom, used to always say by every Sheva Brachas that he spoke at or any chassan and kala that were within earshot of him. Chazal say, and we said it before, chassan, Daima Lamelech. Chassan is Daima Lamelech. And the question that he asked is, how long does the status of Melech last for? Does it last just for the night of the Chasna? Maybe it's the week of the Shevar Brachas. Maybe it ends Shana Rishayna. When does the status of Chassan, Daima Lamelech, end? And he always said the same word. He says, as long as you treat your wife like a Malka, you have a Din Melech. As long as you treat your wife like a queen, you're a king. Treating your wife like a queen means you serve her. If she needs something and needs to go shopping, you offer to do the errands. If you see that she's not feeling well and you have to do carpool today, you do carpool. If it means that you have to, set the Shabbos table because, she's been busy or whatever, she has other things she has to do, you set the Shabbos, you clear the Shabbos table, you take out the garbage, whatever needs to be done, that's your job. If you do that, you're a melech. Don't think, oh, that's the opposite of melech. I'm an eved. No, you're not an eved. You're a melech. There's a Gemara somewhere that says that a person got like a very chash of a position. So he says, Srara, he says, you're giving me it's chashivas. He says, Srara nisim lecha? You think I'm giving you Srara? You think I'm giving you power? I'm giving you authority? Avdus ani naisin lecha. I'm giving you servitude, because to be a servant is really what it means to have srara. Srara, power to a yid, does not mean that people serve me. Power to a yid means that I serve the people, and the people means anyone, everyone, whoever I could serve, whoever needs something, I'm here to fill that need. That's the greatest sign that you're a melech, that you have royalty within you. Is how low are you willing to demean yourself for another person, for another yid? Whether it's a karav or a rachik, what are you willing to do for the klal and for the yachid in order to show that this is my role? My role is to serve you. That is the greatest chus. And if you do these things, Rabbi Say, you will have the greatest marriage, you'll be the greatest husbands, the greatest fathers, the greatest community members, the greatest Isaac B'tzarchei Tzibor, because this is the mindset that a yid has to have, that nothing but nothing is beneath me. I'm not serving myself. Otherwise, you're serving yourself. If you're just looking for kavod, you're not serving Hashem. You're serving yourself. If you're looking for the low hanging fruits that are able to be gotten, but nobody else wants them, that's the malchus. That's where you're going to excel. That's where you're going to be the greatest gabbai, the greatest nasi, the greatest melech, the greatest husband, because it all lies in the side of the Trumas Hadeshim. Have a good Shabbos.